Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. An overcast day as we get ready for hopefully just some rain. There's going to be some seriously scary stuff that's going to be a little further north of us and east. I mean, it's coming. It's well on its way. I've got a couple. My sisters are planning on coming down from Asheville, from the Asheville area, Black Mountain, actually, this weekend. I'm wondering if they're going to be able to get back. Because there's some serious ice and snow that is headed in that direction.
My sister-in-law's in Nashville, and it looks like it's trending a little north of what they thought it was going to be. They're still going to get some, but yesterday they thought they might get a foot and a half of snow, and now it looks like it's 3 to 5 inches on Saturday, and then maybe another inch and a half, but. Problem is if there's ice on top of that,
absolutely.
And that's gonna be the thing. But fortunately for us, it looks like temperature wise I don't think it's gonna get below freezing until Sunday night. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing.
So we'll have some rain
and some cold days next week. Yes. Right, like that's the expectation.
Hopefully nothing terribly bad here weather wise coming up. Hope everybody doing well on this Wednesday. Bill,
is it skewing to the north of us?
Is that the
thinking? Is it like
even maybe north of Birmingham? It looks like it's trending up a little bit.
Yeah, because I mean yesterday it was looking like it was coming Birmingham, Atlanta,
close to us. Yes. Yesterday, yes,
a little north. Now it's much farther north. So hopefully so, and hopefully. It's not as damaging anywhere as some of the thoughts have been.
I'm trying to we're playing at Marshall next week, so we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see if Huntington, West Virginia's impacted.
I would bet it'll
too
be cold.
Much.
Yes.
And yeah, I did see that one of the 2 days that we're up there, the low is 4. So I'm used to more than one number. You know what I mean? I'm used to more than one digit when you tell me a temperature. But yeah, there's some single digit Tuesday, Wednesday temperatures in parts of the parts of the country next week. So I guess I better layer up. Is that the advice?
I would think that would be a good idea, Dan. Bill, Dan, and Jason Caldwell from. Auburn Undercover here in the studio. Drew is at the controls. We'd love for you to join in. A lot to talk about. Auburn getting a big road win last night in basketball. Their first road win of the season. They had another night where they didn't shoot it well from the outside. I mean, Auburn is barely over 10% from three over the last two ball games. Yet they win and win. Fairly comfortably there at the end by 12, 78-66.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where you go like, is it good news or is it bad news? The good news is that I didn't think this team was going to win many games if they didn't shoot.
No, I didn't either.
The defense has really picked up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of that is Arkansas was part of that too.
Yeah.
Now, they played good defense against Arkansas. South Carolina, Ole Miss, not great offensive teams. But South Carolina gets a win last night, played pretty good. Yes, but look, you found a way to win games, and to me, that's a growth of a team. I think we've seen the last week more growth than we've seen probably all year from this team, and it's not what – like, literally, I thought this team was going to be one of the best shooting teams I've seen at Auburn. I said that this summer. Part of that is that Cade Magwood and
some of the guys that
Bashir,
you thought were going to be out there
Bashir,
doing it
two of those guys were guys that I thought were going to be really good shooters on this team, and they're not playing.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just kind of finding ways, and – man, you look at Keyshawn Murphy, he's playing exceptionally good basketball.
He had his best game as an Auburn Tiger last night. Was 16 and 14, tied a career high, or set a career high, I guess, in rebounds.
Played really well, and so, yeah, no, just look, sooner or later, you just got to find ways to win games, and they did it.
I mean, the battle continues, right? However you can figure this out game to game over the course of a conference season – you know, if you can find ways to win. And if it's Auburn, yeah, you would have thought that another 2 of 17 performance from three, especially on the road, is you know, might not be good enough. What is it? You look at 42-26 advantage in the rebounding, 38-14 advantage in the paint.
Yeah, for Auburn dominated inside. I mean, there was no question. It's
39 to 15 free throws attempted. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a willingness to
and hit 32 of those 39.
It was a willingness to be the more physical team in a lot of the ways that really matter, and have an answer and having answers when Ole Miss started that run at, you know, at the end of the game. Right, like when Ole Miss cut it
to three.
Yeah, when they cut it to three, you know, being able to execute enough and for Todd, I mean, he's still Todd Pettiford, right? I mean, he's still one of the most talented guards. I mean, Jason, you've used these superlatives before talking about Pettiford, like as skilled, as complete a point guard, maybe as you've seen very long time, yeah. Wearing this uniform.
Yeah, yeah. I think talent as talented as they've had. Yes, I think the thing for him is to continue doing what he's done, which is try not to be the leading scorer. Now, sometimes you're going to have to be, but I think for him is that, hey, you play defense, you let the game come to you, and you do the things you've done. That's how the team does things. And he's an individual. He can go out and score 30-something. I don't know that makes this team better. I think we've seen here the last couple. Look, if his shot's on early, keep shooting. But I think the last two games we've seen, look, he's what, 1 of 4, 1 of 5 in the first half and three. Then he doesn't shoot another one. I like that. Going, look, okay, I don't feel it tonight. Let's get somebody else involved. And he's doing that much better, in my opinion.
The turnaround jumper late from Tahad, I mean, that's – just a gigantic play as far as the momentum, you know, and Auburn having to have something, having to have some kind of response. And then the dunk, right? Like that's, I mean, beating the press and finishing like that to just sort of seal off any chance that Ole Miss was going to rally back. I thought there was some really important plays from Tahad, even on a night where, yeah, the three-point shooting did not heat up, right? Like the three-point shooting was not where Auburn really hopes it's going to be. Not just from him, but team wide to still find a way to win. And yeah, you mentioned Murphy, like that's just a massive night from a guy who it seems like he is getting stronger the further he gets away from some of those injuries he battled with at the beginning of the season.
He is, I mean, he is a very talented offensive player.
Yes.
I mean, you don't realize that sometimes because he has some games where there's been foul trouble or he hasn't been out there for very many minutes. But, I mean, you saw him make a couple of moves last night, about as quick a spin move to the bucket. He didn't make it, but he got his own rebound and put it back in. But, I mean, you see some things from him, and they even I think Dave Neal even mentioned one time last night, boy, he doesn't move like a 6'10 guy.
That's it, because he's a guard, and that's what you get out of him. I mean, he was a big guard at Ramsey High School. You know, watched him come through camps here, watched him play in high school, and his body has continued to produce. It's almost like Broome. Now, he's a better athlete than Broome was, but Broome had the skill set.
Had the background of having been.
Because he'd been a guard.
Right.
And now you look at Keyshawn Murphy, because it's what the other thing we said, look, coming in this thing is like, look, he's going to be able to shoot the basketball. Like, he can step out and shoot it. Even though he didn't do it at Mississippi State, that's not how they play offense. He will be able to do those things in this offense. And I think there's going to be some games down the stretch here. And Saturday may be one where, look, you're going to depend on him to pull whoever it is away from the
pull
basket.
Some of those big gators away from the
basket. And try to
basket.
Open up the some of those lanes for your other guys. I think that's going to be part of that.
Yeah, I think it's a real positive. You look back at the last couple of ball games, and it was Filip Jovic on Saturday, and then Keyshawn Murphy last night. The two guys, I mean, you'd think, you know, that the way Filip played – Auburn winning by 12, you think, well, he had a really good ball game, and he played well when he was in there, But
didn't get a whole lot of touches.
No, he didn't. Mm-hmm. He didn't. I mean, he was impressive when he was in there, but only finished with I guess like 5 or 6 points.
And some of that I think had to do with Keyshawn Hall bouncing back from the foul trouble against South Carolina that opened up a lot of minutes for Jovich. And Keyshawn plays 35 minutes. He stays out of foul trouble for most of the. He finishes with one. I think Auburn as a whole did a pretty good job. So, I mean, nobody for Auburn had more than three fouls, I think, in the game. Like you didn't mm-hmm. have foul trouble when you're going to roll mostly with seven. Foul trouble can really throw a wrench into things suddenly, like that's and I know that they played Michalik a few minutes too, but like seven guys had double digit minutes last night. That seems to be what they're rolling with for the foreseeable future. And to see to see some of those guys stay ready. And how about only 9 turnovers too? Because in the offensive, as many points as Auburn scored against Georgia and A&M, there were possessions in both of those games where it felt like Auburn was careless with the ball. Not just one guy, there were multiple ill-advised passes or just you're careless with the dribble. Like things that you can avoid, things that you would hope go away the more a team plays together and the more guys get experience playing D1 basketball. I think to only play 9 against a defense trying to force turnovers like a Chris Beard defense, to finish with only 9 turnovers, I think was a step in the right direction too.
I think it's like comparable to being a tempo offense in football, where you go, look, you're going to score more points. But you're also going to give the opponent more opportunities to score because I think in basketball it's the same thing for this team. They're playing under control more, which means you're not going to score as much because you're not shooting as quick as mm-hmm. you were. But you're also not prone to turn it over. And so I think it's kind of hand in hand. It's crazy to think, though, that this team has won 2 games. You're right. They're 4 for 36 last 2 games shooting threes. Mm-hmm. Go back to Missouri. And let's see, that would be 10 for 57 in your last 3 games. They made 10 threes against Arkansas. They've made 10 threes combined the last 10 for 57.
Ole Miss missed 39 shots from the field, and they finished with 8 offensive rebounds. And that, I think, is going to drive. I mean, I think it was actively.
Well, Auburn was dominating so much. Yeah,
it was actively driving the coaches crazy during mm-hmm. the game, right? I think there were times when he was like, I think there's at least one timeout where Chris Beard just like rebound is his only message. Like they've all got to go. And you know what's crazy is Chest from LSU, the transfer. He had multiple double digit rebound games at LSU. So I would think that he would be, and maybe that's why you saw him a little bit more as the game went on, is that he was a pretty reliable rebounder as a freshman before coming to Ole Miss. I liked his game at LSU quite a bit, as a matter of fact, for a first-year guy trying to mix it up in the SEC. But it's it was pretty shocking to see, because it's not like Ole Miss has a couple of bigs, talented guys that are in that 6'7" or bigger range, and they were just non-factors on the boards. Auburn outworked them, outsweated them, and I thought came away as the team that pretty much deserved to win. Like I mean, that was the team that Auburn. Yeah. I mean, Auburn played winning basketball.
I mean,
in a couple of ways that really matter.
Yeah, they absolutely worked harder. I mean, and dominated on the on the defensive end. I mean. Well, on both ends. I mean, it was in the second half. At one point, Auburn had more offensive rebounds than Ole Miss had defensive rebounds in the second half.
Yeah, no, and that's this team has done a much better job of that. And it's really not so looking ahead to Saturday. I mean, like that's as difficult as it's going to get for this team. I think
it's as difficult as it gets in the SEC right now.
But I don't think rebounding is as much maybe as defensive protection of the rim. Some of that is giving up offensive rebounds.
Mm-hmm. Outscore Florida by 24 in the paint. on Saturday like you did Ole Miss last night.
Yeah, I think you'd feel okay that. I think that would be the biggest surprise in history of basketball.
You
probably.
play one of my favorite games where you just pick one stat.
That's it.
So it's like you told me Auburn's.
If you do that. Yeah, well, that's the thing, though.
Hey, I'll tell you a stat that Auburn can't afford to have another 2 for 18 from three against Florida. You're going to have to hit some threes.
Here's the thing, too. But I also don't think you can get caught up in what Dan was talking about earlier. I also don't think you can get caught up going, well, we can't score inside, so we're just going to shoot a bunch of threes.
No, they don't need to. They don't need to launch 40 threes or anything.
And I think you have to continue doing what you're doing. And if that's not good enough, that's okay. But I think we figured this is almost like thinking about football. Football was the opposite because you went, man, okay, here's what this team is against Baylor, and you go, man, that could be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't see it again until the end of the year. Basketball, you're going like, okay, now this team's going to run and gun and shoot a bunch of threes, and now you go, but I know it that seems like this what this team should do, but maybe that's not what this team should be. That's not their idea. I think we're finding the identity now is when you don't do that also and you only play seven guys, you're able to play defense harder. When you're running and gunning, it's hard to play defense. Mm-hmm. And I think you had to find some common ground going, look, we got to be able to play better defense. How are we going to do that?
Just on your way here on the Wednesday drive, Jason Caldwell with us. And we want, again, I said it to you off the air, but definitely want to thank Jason for filling in while Dan and I were both out last week. I saw some comments there on the message boards. Folks really enjoyed that. I know you did a great job.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate that. All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Love for you to join in. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390. And, of course, it's sponsored by Skybar as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
War Eagle. And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. And we were just talking during the break. I mean, when you talk college basketball, SEC basketball, the big news, the big story right now is Alabama trying to get Charles Bediako back in the lineup after 2 years in the G League.
Yeah, 2.5 years.
Yeah.
This was 3 or 3.
Oh, that's right. You're absolutely right.
He played 5 games this year in the G League. Here's the thing. I hope it happens. Because I wanted to blow this whole thing up.
I keep thinking that the next one is going to. With all these lawsuits and everything.
This is the one we haven't seen.
No, you're right.
It was bad enough to go, hey, this guy never went to college. He made it to the G League, didn't make it. Now he wants to go to college. To go from college to the G League and back.
To make yourself eligible for the draft. And forego your eligibility. You know, He chose to do that.
Correct.
So reading from Isaac Trotter's story on CBSSports.com, Charles Bediako was given a green light to return to Alabama after going undrafted 2 seasons ago. Bediako could see action as early as Saturday when Alabama plays
Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. On Tuesday, he filed suit against the NCAA requesting immediate, preliminary, and permanent injunctive relief. He was granted a temporary restraining order Wednesday by a Tuscaloosa County judge.
Shocker.
And Bediako, since Bediako enrolled in Alabama in 2021, he is still within his 5-year eligibility clock, but the NCAA announced Tuesday a stiff pushback to Bediako's eligibility claim. Quote, Mr. Bediako signed 3 NBA contracts after competing in college for 2 seasons. The NCAA has not and will not grant eligibility to any prospective or returning student athletes who have signed an NBA contract. Eligibility rules ensure high school athletes get a shot at earning scholarships, and we will continue to consistently apply and defend these rules. Unquote. The judicial system's temporary restraining order has overruled that for now. Bediako re-enrolled for the spring semester and will be eligible to play until his next court hearing scheduled for January 27th.
Yeah, so they'll get a couple of ball games, it looks like. Now we'll see if the NCAA, and I don't know that I can ever expect the NCAA is going to win these. The NCAA does win that, then they could very well make Alabama forfeit.
Charlie Baker has been adamant and was adamant before the because we're talking. I mean, the restraining order came today.
Yes,
for Bediako. Yesterday, Charlie Baker was adamant that players in Bediako's situation should not be eligible return to college athletics.
If you can't win this, if you're the NCAA and you can't win this, then it's
you're
over.
Then
it's
over. You're done.
There are no eligibility rules.
That's right.
That's it.
Eligibility window, whatever.
Well, we're seeing that right now.
Yeah. I mean,
Trinidad Chambliss, again, a judge in Oxford,
in
Mississippi,
Oxford is said that so, Trinidad like Chambliss said, hey, should
so,
be able to come
again,
back.
Again, JT Thor, no longer in the NBA. He's not. He had it one time. Mm-hmm. What's the difference? I don't understand the difference now.
No,
you're still a professional athlete.
So as Trotter points out in the CBS article, you have three former G League players: the player at Santa Clara, the player at Louisville, and the player at BYU that were cleared by the NCAA because they were within the 5-year window of graduating high school and had not signed with an NBA franchise. Bediako is citing now, Bediako's pointing out the Baylor player who was allowed to play earlier this season, who was a draft pick. He was the 31st pick in the 23 draft, never signed with an NBA team, was playing overseas basketball, and was given his eligibility back.
Yeah, what did Bediako – didn't he sign, though?
Bediako has signed three NBA contracts.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, that is the next step. If you do that, then you're right, Jason. There's no reason that in any sport you shouldn't be able to get a guy who has
okay. That's like I said. So
who has played professionally?
So JT back. Thor, right now.
Would you now? How about this? Would you agree with this statement from Bediako's lawyer, though? The NCAA's arbitrary and inconsistent enforcement of its eligibility standards is inflicting immediate and irreparable harm upon Bediako. Now, I don't know.
No, unquote. I would not.
Now, I would not agree with the second half necessarily, but I do think that the reason a lot of these doors are open for legal action is because of the first half of that sentence.
Well, it's because people took them to court for legal action. Yep. Like, that's never happened. They're like, hey, look, you're ineligible. Okay, sorry, then I'll go on and do something else. That's the way it's always been. And now people are like, well, we're going to sue you. Okay, well, then they started winning, and like, so
there's a lot of depends on where you take them to court.
There is no telling who could attempt to return to college football.
Absolutely.
Or men's basketball.
Well, like I said,
or
JT Thor
or
any was
sport,
20,
baseball
JT Thor was
2021
or women, yeah. As a freshman.
Okay,
there you go, JT Thor. Right now, if I'm Auburn, no. I'm going to court today. Going, look, what's the difference between G League and NBA? Nothing. They're both professionals.
They sign NBA contracts. I mean, really?
Hey, bring him back and play him Saturday.
What okay. about Cheney's years in Division II?
They tried to get those back. Right. I think already.
It seems to me it's not as crazy. I mean, draft picks.
Well, again, that's the inconsistency of the arbitrary.
Well, but the problem is, it's not them. Like Trinidad Chambliss, they're not giving him his eligibility back, but they're continuing to sue until a judge says, "Okay, he's like." That's
not
the
fair.
Thing. Can you find Cheney Johnson where he went to the dentist and had a tooth pulled? Maybe he can get a year back.
That's basically
what we're doing here.
I was just saying during the commercial break, like I sort of understand in a big picture idea. I understand the argument for just because you want to go into the draft as an NBA player or an NFL player. I don't know if that alone should necessarily mean, all right, you're totally finished with college basketball. I sort of like guys being able to, like in baseball, being able to keep their eligibility. If they have eligibility remaining, they can use that as leverage when they are drafted by a pro team and sort of, you know, decide they have options. I don't hate that. But that's not something that I think you decide in the first couple of weeks of January of a college
Correct.
Basketball season, right?
Yeah,
like
no,
that's
no,
something
no.
that would need to be.
Like, okay, when's the draft? June.
Yes, the NBA draft is in June.
Make the NBA draft. Let's do this like it's done in most every other sport. The NFL's not. Baseball is. Why couldn't you do the? I guess because they're waiting until the season's over with. But yes, do it and say, look, you got 2 weeks. You got 2 weeks to decide if you're staying in the draft,
sure,
or you're coming back. Now, because you have 15 scholarship spots, now because you have money available, I think now you could make that work. But yes, you can't do it 6 months,
mid-season,
a year,
no.
3 years after the fact.
Right. Bill, you're the commissioner of a prestigious fantasy baseball league. There are certain rules that can't be changed
No.
2 months into the season?
No, not mid-season. No, no, absolutely not. That's the crazy thing. Hey, John has been hanging on for a while as we jumped into the Betty Yocko story. Hey, John, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, guys, real quick, I think one of the differences in Auburn's offensive play here lately and defensive play is Keyshawn Murphy looks very, very, very healthy, mm-hmm. and he did not at the beginning of the year. Trying to find a three-point shooter if Auburn's not able to, you know, bring back one of the guards from last year, like a Denver Jones. What about a guy like Abdul Bashir? Where's he at as far as health? Like, we haven't seen him much. I don't think he's been ruled out for the year.
No.
Any updates on him or thoughts on Murphy?
Yeah, I think he's still continuing to try to get back strength and do those things.
There was an update this week, right?
Yeah, Steven said that he is getting better and they expect him to be back at some point.
He hasn't been a healthy scratch. I've had people wondering about that like the last couple of weeks where it's like, oh, is this a doghouse situation? But no, he hasn't been dressing out. I believe he's been sort of doing treatment and rehab and practice rather than participating. But that's progressed. That's changed.
I think
the hope is, yeah, that maybe he can get some minutes.
I think you think for him and Simon Walker, the question is going to be defensively. Yeah. I think that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Can those guys defend well enough to take minutes away from other guys? And I think that's probably some of that. We saw Simon Walker earlier in the year going, look, he can shoot the basketball. But can you do that, especially the way they're playing now defensively, going, look, they're going to have to at some point. You're going to have to get somebody else involved. I would think Bashir, if you can get him back out there because of his experience, would probably give a little bit more.
I'll tell you what, the longer you roll with seven and emergency minutes for Mishalik when Tahad needs a breather, like the harder it's going to be for one of these guards. Because keep in mind, these are all guys that are playing year one of their – like it's their first Division I season. So whether it's Bashir, whether it's Simon, whether it's Magwood, the longer they're not in the rotation, the harder it's going to be – in like early February to suddenly break into a rotation full of guys that have been playing together in conference play for a month. So yeah, I feel like the clock's ticking a little bit for any of those guys to break through, or else this team I think could get used to what the seven-man rotation is like, and it would take unavailability or injury or something to open up a spot for one of those younger players.
And just really quick, if the Betty Akos thing goes through, would Auburn be able to bring back a Denver Jones? Is he somebody who would have eligibility?
I mean, in the sense that there are no rules and you could bring back whoever you – I mean, Auburn might be able to bring back Charles Barkley.
I think they tried to do Denver and,
right,
and Chaney Johnson to get their year back, and it couldn't get it back this past year. I think it would be more if you had a guy who had – they were trying to get a waiver to get another year. Could you find could you find somebody? I don't care where he is. Maybe you find a G League guy.
Somebody else in the G League.
Maybe
you know
play at all.
You know who Isaac Trotter mentions who's interesting, because I remember Auburn was linked to him a little bit. There was one player, exactly one, which I think shows you how the NIL game has changed basketball a little bit. There was one player who had eligibility remaining and went in the draft and went undrafted, and it was R.J. Lewis. From St. John's last year, who presumably I think would be very interested in returning to college basketball if suddenly that was open up. I think there are a lot of players, there are a lot of programs out there that would look at him and say, mm-hmm. suddenly injecting 20, 25 minutes of R.J. Lewis into your team, into your team's backcourt could open up a lot of possibilities.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it, John. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. James, hold on. You'll be up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and we've got Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here with us as Drew is at the controls. And James, I was trying to remember who James, I believe, is hanging on. Hey, James.
Hey, guys.
Hey, James.
What's going on?
Not much. Jason, I'm the one that ran into you the other day at Byron's
a
couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know if you heard Bill or Dan told you yesterday, but I came up with something yesterday. They were some Auburn people I knew were asking me, would I take back any of the old Auburn football players that were in the portal, didn't find a home? Like I told Bill and Dan yesterday, first I said no, and then I thought for about 15, 30 seconds, I said, yeah, I'd take them back. And I said, my idea is, and I think this should be done by all schools. Now, they're not all going to do this because I have no power, but I think it's a nice suggestion. You'd give them some type of like a gray shirt. Tell them, you got to pay for your own semester. And, you know, if you earn your spot back on the team, you have to have an incentive-laced contract. So if you had behavior problems, your incentive-based contract is on production and you not being a behavior problem. If you're not a team player, it's laden in productivity on the field and being a team player. And I didn't get to talk to Bill and Dan because we got cut off because we were on a hard break. But
hour.
I was kind of worrying what y'all thought.
The only problem is that you have a hard number of 105 players now. Now there are some players that could be designated that you could say, hey, look, they lost their spot because of the rule change. So there's a few guys, there's a little wiggle room to have a few guys that don't count against that number.
And all 105 don't have to get full scholarship money or anything
either. But you only have 105.
That's right.
And I have to imagine, and I mean there could be a player or two that this doesn't qualify for. But I have to imagine that, I mean, most of the players who have left Auburn in the portal have found Power Four conference homes already. I would say a decent number. Okay,
there's still some out there that haven't.
Okay, and I would say of the ones that haven't, they would probably consider going group of five, no strings attached, before they come to Auburn on a gray shirt situation that James is requesting. I would think, like if there are significant sort of punitive financial penalties attached to returning to Auburn,
correct,
they might pursue.
Yeah, where you're on a scholarship somewhere else,
going and playing somewhere else on a scholarship.
The other issue is that, look, they're not done with the portal, even though we're sitting here January 21st.
Yeah, now they may not be able to get players in school for the spring.
Yeah, they will.
In a while they won't.
There will be a date. But I think the kids.
I don't think they're there yet, though. No,
and so that's the thing. So you're talking about they could add a few more guys to this number, which I think is close to 90 right now. That's not counting a couple of guys who were on scholarship last year who returned. Like, you could be at 95 already with some walk-ons on this team that probably will stay and might end up being on scholarship.
We've got a lot of stuff going on, but I'm glad we're getting to this. Appreciate the phone call, James, because I want to ask Jason about any players in particular that sort of moved the needle for him of the recent transfer additions.
Boy, there have been a lot in the last week or so.
It's hard to even keep up.
Leave a guy out, it's okay.
I love what they've done on the offensive line because they completely rebuilt it.
Mm-hmm.
And still working to add more.
Six or seven transfers. I guess it's seven transfers and six signees they had in the freshman class.
You've added Stanton Ramil, Joseph Simmons, Jacob Strand, T.J. Hedrick, Cole Best, Cole Skinner, Jack Lehrer, and Kenneth McManus.
So that's eight.
You've got eight transfers that you've added to that group. You've got an experience. Kenneth McManus, guy that started every game last year.
There could be five starters on that list you just rattled off.
I think so, yes. And then you got some return guys, and like I said, you can still keep going. So, I think there's a few of those guys. I think a guy like Jack Lehrer is important because he's played multiple positions. Mm-hmm. I think that's really big. I mentioned Cole Best I talked about. I think he's a guy that's going to be a leader and one of these guys that can really do things. I like when you start talking about Deshaun Womack. I think he's a guy that moves the needle for me because I think he's a guy that physically can do that up front defensively, and I think that's a big deal. Then you start looking at tight end. I think there's some interesting guys. A guy that is really early that nobody has talked about very much is Jonathan Echols. I think that guy at tight end is a guy that has a chance to do some really good things. Your wide receiver, like they've been really productive at USF. Chaz Nimrod to me is a guy that I think people are sleeping on. I think he's an NFL receiver if he stays healthy. I think he's that type of dynamic player. And then, you know, you look on the like that defensive backfield.
Yeah, they had to do some work there at corner.
They've added some guys. You know, I've seen Shamar Arnaud since he was in high school. Mm-hmm. He's extremely talented. He's long, athletic, do some things. And then, you know, I still think a guy that is way under the radar, like, is Gavin Jenkins, the corner from USF that redshirted. Mm-hmm. He can really run. He's long. Andre Jordan, I think, is a starter for this team, mm-hmm. coming from UCLA.
Would you say Gaskin is under the radar? Because I know some folks who think Gaskin's coming in, too.
I think my thing is just how do you get guys on the field at those spots? That's going to be my thing. Because, look, you got safety nickel, and you got Champ Anthony back, Caleb Harris, Sylvester Smith, Anquan Fagans, Eric Winters, Jacoby Matthews, and you got Wayne Henry, Shadrick Tootle, DeMonte Tabb, Jack Luttrell, and Fred Gaskin. It's 11 guys.
Yeah.
Now you wouldn't expect DeMonte Tabb. He's not here in the spring. Wayne Henry, I think, is going to have to get bigger and stronger. So all of a sudden you go, you're nine. A
couple of those guys might be true safeties rather than
I think Gaskin's a guy that is more of a nickel. Yeah. I think we just saw a similar type guy that transferred out. I think he's going to be a guy that fits in that role of playing some nickel, playing some safety, being close to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, it has really been busy. I mean, obviously the portal closing, but there's still quite a few players out there. Auburn's got a running back on campus today. I mean, I don't like you said, I don't think they're anywhere near done. I think they still would like to add more beef, more guys on the line of scrimmage, especially defensive. They've obviously been looking for another receiver.
Yeah, I think there's you look at those. I think, you know, it's been talked about some, but. You know, Dallas Walker, I think you look and go and look, if everybody else is trying to get years back, I think it's a similar situation. Look, hey, see if you can get a year back.
He had a year where he didn't play.
Did not play in 2022. If you could get Dallas Walker back, that would be a huge one, mm-hmm. allow you to play Malik Autry more as a three technique guy, I think, and so it would allow you to shift some things around.
Is there a retention you really like, maybe among guys who, because we've talked a lot this week about Jared Smith. I think there's a big expectation as far as him taking a year two jump. I think that you could see Bobble Woodby sort of in that same sort of mix. And I've mentioned Bryce Kane a couple times. We talk about the receivers as a guy that he's someone who seemed like he was ready to go every time we were out there in practice watching, and it just was a matter of getting his number called. Is there someone I'm not talking necessarily like Jeremiah Cobb or
like Xavier Atkins.
Yeah, like is there someone who's a little – yeah.
Yeah, Bryce Diaz, Elijah Melendez.
Sure.
Both those – I thought those two guys were really good last year. When we saw them, I think we'll see more of them.
Melendez got better every week.
Yeah, and Bryce Diaz is such a physical freak kind of guy. Those are two that I really like. You know, there's guys that I think have a place. I just want to see where it is. Like Darion Smith.
Yeah.
When that guy played, he was the best pass rusher on that defensive line, in my opinion. I don't think there's like defensive line, not necessarily Crawford.
Good call.
Can he play? Is he going to get big enough to play inside? Is he a defensive end? That's some. And then I saw enough of him, even though he was a backup tackle last year. I think Ty Buster is really talented offensive lineman. Is he a guard? What is he? I don't know. See how he develops, and can you keep that? You know, it may not be this year. That's the thing. Can you keep guys around another year in some of these situations? But I think a lot of those young players are really talented that you kept this year.
They did a good job, I think, of keeping a lot of the players from the freshman class from last year.
Absolutely. And I think that was the focus, going, look, those are guys that they're really talented. You're not having to pay them as much as you know, because you look and go, man, there's probably four guys you lost. Obviously, Deuce is a guy you would like to keep, but Cam Coleman and some of these guys, and you go, man, from a monetary standpoint, you're probably 12 players you're able to sign instead of re-signing for that may be valuable for this team.
I feel like when people mention Ty Buster, they also mention Jacoby Ward,
yep.
Right, as another young offensive lineman who could.
There are only three. Returning. Kale is the other one,
and I think Jacoby Ward really talented. I think the focus for him now is going from 345 to 330, being in better shape to play in this offensive scheme, doing those, some of those things. I think that's what has been the focus. He looks really good. I saw him actually yesterday, maybe. So that's part of this is. Hey, you're transitioning back to tempo offense, and you look at how they're recruiting offensive linemen and the numbers up there. I think that shows up.
And I remember you telling us about the Smith twins a while ago.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, talented. Duke Smith is as talented athletically as you can get. I think Eric is a guy that I would think, can you get him to 235 and play a hybrid tight end role maybe down the road for him? But Duke's a guy that obviously this spring there's going to be a wide open wide receiver room with a bunch of new faces. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Let's get back to the Drive hotline, and Tommy is up next. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, didn't y'all have a conversation yesterday about coaches who went back to the alma mater and won a national championship?
I think that we were talking coaches who won a championship as players and then came back and led those teams.
At their alma mater. And caller yesterday pointed out that Frank Leahy is the only coach who's ever done that.
So Cristobal had Miami won, I think Cristobal would have been considered the only modern era coach. He's on what 89 and 90 championship teams, something like that,
yeah,
at Miami.
A couple, I think,
and then to come back and then lead that same team to the national championship as a coach.
Yeah, because I first heard that, I thought, well, Shug did it, but Shug didn't win a national championship as a player, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Spurrier won a national championship at his alma mater, but did not win
it
one.
It would still be a small list though.
As a player, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Did Tom Osborne, was he a Nebraska guy? I can't remember. I know there's a few of those.
I don't think he was. I think he was a smaller college.
I mean, it's Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
That's one.
Did he? Ooh, I don't know if.
They didn't win it with him.
Yeah, right? I don't think Harbaugh was on the championship team as a player. Yeah.
Yes, right.
Hey, Jason, do you have a thought on how Golish is doing as far as high school relationships with coaches? I know you had a lot to do to repair that, but can you have an opinion on how Golish is doing?
I think they're doing a good job considering that they're having to do it now while they're still in the portal. So they're still recruiting portal guys, but the coaches are on the road. So they've been on the road for the last 2 weeks and doing those things. I know he has plans to speak to the high school coaches soon.
Yeah, I've seen reports of him being quite a few places.
I believe they're going to bring back the high school coaching clinic.
Good.
Which was not done the last few years. I think they're going to bring that back, is to bring high school coaches on campus. And so, I've had a couple guys say, hey, look, it's an open door. We want those guys to come check us out. So I think right now, as much as they can do, they've been able to do. So I know he's been hitting up schools and was at some schools that maybe don't necessarily have 2027 players, but they're used to going to see school. And that's kind of old school mentality. But I think they've done a pretty good job so far.
Well, that's good. Had another thought, and I can't think of it now. Thank you for taking my call.
Appreciate the call, Tommy.
Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, we'll get to our final break of hour number one, back with our last segment with Jason. So come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Jason Caldwell of Auburn Undercover here on the Wednesday Drive. I wanted to, when Jason gets back in, get some thoughts on baseball. Folks are really excited about this upcoming baseball season, with Auburn being picked preseason as high as number 5. And I know that Jason's been out watching some of the workouts and the inner squad as Auburn getting ready 3 weeks from Friday. The opening series.
Yeah, no, it's close, and it feels like, you know, they started earlier because they got to go full team 4 weeks out, but had three scrimmages last weekend, had a couple of innings yesterday, off today. We'll go back now, depending on weather here the next few days, going to try to scrimmage and do some stuff. But it's been good so far. I think, you know, you take a break and all of a sudden you jump back in and – there's no ramp up time for the pitcher. So all of a sudden, you go, okay, now start throwing the hitters again. So I think, you know, Butch Thompson was like, you know, hey, they hadn't thrown as many strikes as he wanted, but Jake Marciano, the Virginia Tech transfer, has been good.
Lefty, right?
Lefty. And so I think he's a guy, if you said, hey, if you press me today, three weekend starters, I don't know who the other two are. I think he's one of them. You know, obviously, you got a lot of options out of that group. But Garrett Brewer, the lefty transfer from Michigan State, is a guy that I think back into games, I don't think closer, but he might be your, you know, two-inning lefty setup guy. And then Alex Petrovic has been pitching really well, and he threw good in the fall, come back, and the guy's got, you know, 2 years where he's kind of had some arm injuries here or there, but he's healthy so far, and he's pitched well. And so those guys, Drew Whalen, you know, there's been some guys that have thrown well. Can they start?
Whalen's the Western Kentucky transfer. Yeah. I've heard some folks raving about him.
Yep, and so there's some guys there, and you start going, look, how do you ramp up, and you know, can you be more consistent now, and get as you get closer to the season? They got a lot of options, and then from a position standpoint, you know, Chris Rembert and Eric Guevara, you got some talented guys. Todd Clay's been really good, Auburn High transfer back from UAB. Mm-hmm. Where does he wind up? Is it third base? Is it first base? I think that's some of the things. Brandon McCrane is kind of a utility guy that plays everywhere. So you got a lot of players now. You just got to start to figure out kind of how things fit.
Yeah, I mean there are not a ton of open spots. Just a few, and trying to fit some guys in. It sounds like there's some bats.
Yeah, no.
I mean, this. I said it yesterday, Jason. I don't know. I don't know that I can remember a roster as deep as this year's roster.
Yeah, no. You start going, you know, Chase Fralick, and you know, you go Fralick, Rembert, Guevara, Clay, Kay Ballou, Bub Terrell, and you go, okay. Where do you go after that? I mean, obviously, Lucas Steele's a guy that's DH that could catch, could play first base, could be the DH. You know, you've added some transfers that can swing the bat. And then you go a couple of freshmen. I'm telling you, Ethan Bingaman, he's the fourth pitcher that was really good this first week. And he's a guy that
he's a
true freshman. He can also play outfield. Yeah. He can swing the bat too. But he was the number two pitcher on a high school team that had three players drafted, they had three players drafted in the first round from his high school in California. He's 94, 95 on the mound from the right side, can swing the bat. He's a guy that, had he said, look, I'm going to go play pro baseball, he's probably a second, third round draft guy probably. But once he got through his, hey, here's what it's going to take, then he said, I'm going to school. And so he ended up being the late rounded, you know, draft guy. But he's talented. Mason McCrane, true freshman from Glenwood, is a lefty, 6'7", 205, 210, swings the bat, can play center field at 6'7".
Wow.
But he also throws 94, 95 on the mound from the left side. They got a couple of two-way guys like that from this freshman class that'll have a chance to.
Yeah, I mean, no question. I mean, everybody really, really excited, and a lot of preseason hype, and I think deservedly so, and we'll see. I mean, I like I was saying yesterday, it's just like the big things right now is how's it going to shake out as far as, you know, your pitching situation. You know, who are the starters? Who are they going to be the, you know, the middle guys, the midweek guys, and then getting to the end of the game?
That's it. And you think about, you know, kind of what it's looking like. You got Andres Alvarez and Christian Chatterton and Jackson Sanders, those young guys from last year that pitched a lot. And so kind of defining roles, that's the hard part. But I think after you get through a couple of weeks, the last couple of weeks heading into the season, you start to try to define roles. I mean, you got – you know, Ryan Hetzler back, who was a closer last year. They looked at him as a starter. Could he be a long reliever? I think that might be his role.
Knowing the way Butch likes continuity, if Christian and Double A could pitch like guys that you can feel comfortable starting every weekend in league play, which is sort of what you saw. You saw glimpses of that last year. Like if you saw Chatterton and Alvarez doing that, like that'd be and then you maybe find one guy to slot in as your third SEC starter.
Yeah, I think Marciano is going to be one of those guys. Yeah. I think he's lefty, pitched, you know, 14 starts last year in the ACC. I think that guy's a guy that I think right now is going to be one of those guys. But yeah, you got a lot of options. That's it. And can you find the guys you feel like are the guys now and then let them roll? Mm-hmm. I think that's a key.
Jason, always great to spend some time with you. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys are all doing.
Yeah, check us out, auburnundercover.com, part of the 24/7 network. Portal still rolling, basketball, baseball, softball, a lot going on. So check us out there. So all the social media platforms, all that stuff as well as at Auburn Undercover. And find me, ITAT Jason.
Thanks, man. Have a great week.
Yeah, y'all too.
All right, we're back with hour number two. Stick with us.
Following is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Hope everybody doing well on this hump day. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell for being with us in hour number one. And again, I want to thank Jason, Brian, Justin, Jacob, and of course, Don Dunn.
Yeah.
Filling in last week. Don's going to be in tomorrow while you're gone, and then he'll come back on Friday the way he always does.
Maybe Ferguson tomorrow too. I mean, he's back. He's back from Oxford,
and then he'll be.
I think he's leaving Friday morning for Gainesville.
Yeah,
so I think he'll be around. I'll ask him. We're doing a podcast tonight, so
hopefully
I'll ask.
It'd be good to hear from Justin, get his thoughts on on last night's game. And
if not, give him a call.
Yeah, we will. So that'll be tomorrow's show. But again, our thanks to everybody who helped fill in some last week. In hour number one, we look back at last night's win, Auburn's first road win, and they really needed a road win. They're now 3-3 in conference as they get ready to go, as you mentioned, to Gainesville on Saturday for it's a 4 o'clock tip, I believe.
It's 3.
Okay, it's 4 o'clock Eastern.
Then. Yeah, I think they did not announce it.
No, they hadn't announced it, and it's one of the things Andy was saying yesterday. He wasn't sure what time, but it is it's a 4 o'clock Eastern tip.
Yeah. So Florida, it's the ESPN game, one of several ESPN games on Saturday, with Auburn going to the reigning national champ, the Florida Gators, 14-5 after a win.
Yeah, they have figured things out after struggling a little bit back in pre-conference.
Yeah, they took care of business. It was they were comfortably ahead of LSU all night long last night. Chinyelu had 21 rebounds in that game last night. Mm. So it's going to be more of a battle in the front court than it was last night for Auburn against Ole Miss. But still, you know, seeing the way Auburn, was able to overcome that lack of sharpness with their shooting to score in the paint and fight for rebounds and defend, and then the offense started to heat up a little bit. I mean, Auburn scores nearly 50 points.
Yeah, I mean,
the first half was
really not a lot of fun to watch.
Shot over 50%
like offense. Yeah.
In the second half. So yeah, I mean, I think
was,
Auburn
was it 28-27 at half, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Auburn
scored 50 in the second half.
Auburn heats up in the second half, and I think they come in with a little bit of momentum. Still, it's Florida. It's going to be a tough game on Saturday,
but it has really been a struggle for Auburn. Against the Gators, especially down there.
But this is an entirely new team, right? I mean, you're talking about a group of guys that I mean, other than Tahad, this is a group that hasn't seen Florida in an Auburn uniform before, and we'll see if ignorance is bliss for guys like Phillip and Sebastian and even the more experienced players that have seen Florida in their careers. Keyshawn played them last year with State. Keyshawn, I think Keyshawn Hall has seen Florida at some point in his career as well. So, I mean, it's going to be a battle. You knew when they revealed the conference schedule, you knew that Florida was going to be one of the toughest
games. This stretch coming up for Auburn, we talked about it. The first six really felt Auburn needed to go 4-2. They go 3-3. And now it's going to be tough to make them up because the next six are against most of the best teams in the SEC.
Yep.
It's a tough, tough stretch. The middle six for Auburn is going to be very difficult. And, I mean, this is one where if they come out of the next six around 3-3, then if they can go 3-3 or better, I mean, that would be, I think, a tremendous accomplishment with the schedule Auburn has coming up.
Oh, I think you defend your home court, you know, between now and, I don't know, the trip to Arkansas. Defend your home court. You already stole one road game with the win last night. If you can pick off another one, you know, whether it's at Florida or at Tennessee or at Arkansas, like winning
well,
one
our,
of the
Arkansas looked pretty good.
Oh, I know. I know. No, I think any other. I mean,
goodness.
And going to Tennessee is rarely easy.
You're right.
For men's basketball teams. So I mean, it's going to be like it'll be tough. But I think being able to win last night and being able to do enough to win Saturday against South Carolina, like at least you feel like you've got. You know, you've got some, you've got some fire. You got some firepower yourself as a team, and so we'll see if they can. We'll see what they can do.
Yeah, mentioned Arkansas. They destroyed Vandy last night. Just absolutely destroyed Vandy last night. And Auburn gets Vandy at home. So I mean, Vandy is they've come back to earth. So I mean, we'll see. I mean, it's going to be really, really tough. Going down to Gainesville. Auburn hasn't won in Gainesville in forever. Mm-hmm. I think they've lost 15.
The 90s, right?
I think they've lost 15 straight in Gainesville.
Andy gave us the year. I think it was 96. He mentioned it yesterday on his call. I think, Cliff Ellis, the last Auburn coach to win in mm-hmm. Gainesville. So, I mean, and then Florida's had several national championships since then. And the entire Three. Bruce Pearl era, you know, happened, you know, between mm-hmm. now and then. No, it'd be and that's not a team that loses very often. Has Florida lost at home in conference this year? I don't think they have. They've been a pretty tough out at home under Coach Golden and really, you know, since things got rolling, Billy Donovan was really tough to beat, you know, at Florida during his time as the coach there. So I mean, it's gonna be and they bring back. For all the things we talked about with last year's Auburn team, right? The thought that you had the
Florida's 9-0 at home.
Yeah, the familiarity you had last year with Auburn, with players like Janai and Dylan having played together for multiple years, Chris mm-hmm. as well. Like you had continuity in the front court. You had guys who had played. They hadn't just played minutes in college basketball. They'd played those minutes together. Florida's got some of that now with Kondo coming back and with Hauk, who I swear played his best basketball of the year against Auburn. Those three games.
He played really well against Auburn. He had some really good games.
Well, and the tournament. And in the tournament too, he was a huge part of, like, when teams were doubling Kondo, he was able to he was able to really make him pay for it. So yeah, no, Florida's a uniquely, like, they've got the best front court in the conference.
Yeah,
like, it's a uniquely tough matchup. Mm-hmm. We'll see if Auburn's
here's one where we've talked about it. I mean, just playing seven, and really Auburn's front court of the two Keyshawns and Phillip, it's going to be quite a challenge to stay out of foul trouble and be productive against the Gators.
I think you're going to need productive minutes from Sebastian.
Yep.
Too, right? Like, I think all four.
I forgot Sway.
But I think all four of those guys.
Yeah.
Like, it is huge, and you're probably going to, you know, depending on how much you want to play Jovic, like, I think that you might see a couple of those guys out there at the same time, and it would be, especially with Florida's size, mm-hmm. I think it's a huge game and I would say that for this team, if you can beat Florida in Gainesville, you can beat anyone.
You can beat anyone
mm-hmm. anyone on your schedule, and I think a win like this would be just a gigantic shot in the arm for a team with some tough games between now and the end of the year.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And let's get to the phones, and Tex gets us started this hour. Hey, Tex.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. I did not disappear. I didn't get deported or anything. I just been extremely busy. So can we talk a little bit about three different sports? Do we have a
sure.
little time?
Oh, yeah, we got time.
Okay, you've been talking about basketball. Watch us last night. So what was the major difference in the first half and the second half? More attacking, more speed, more running up and down the floor? What changed?
I think Auburn decided, they would – you know, that they shot the ball a lot and didn't make a lot of them the first half from the outside. They didn't take as many threes in the second half last night. I think they realized they had the advantage there inside, and that Keyshawn Murphy was just a mismatch for anybody they had. So he and Keyshawn Hall especially, I think were able to just have their way there inside against Ole Miss last night. In the second half, especially.
And so how do you feel Murphy matches up against Florida's big guys?
He's a little more finesse than theirs. And he's, look, he's not as big either. I mean, he's 6'10". Florida's got Florida seems like they have a half a dozen guys that are 6'10". They have three or four guys that are his size or taller. So it's going to be a difficult matchup for him. I think he'll be quicker, and you saw him make a couple of moves last night that that you don't usually see big guys be able to make. So that's something that could be, could be used as an advantage.
Yeah. Well, and then we can go ahead and move on to football and football recruiting. I'm pleasantly surprised that our ability to work through the portal to at least fill needs. You have to wait and look and see how the players that we get
sure
actually fit in. But I think it's, as I watch Indiana, there's a lot of discussion about did they actually cheat? Have they stole signs, et cetera, et cetera. It looks to me when you have the men they have on both sides in the line, you win. I think Spector always talks about that.
Oh yeah, I mean,
massive.
I don't know if they had anybody's plays or signals or whatever, but they don't do anything to beat themselves. I mean, they are so sound that's something that's just really really impressive to see as a team that they don't seem to feel pressure. They don't seem to nothing seemed to bother them. They just went about their business and did what they were supposed to do, it seemed like, play after play.
And the one thing a little bit I was worried about about football, and I talked to somebody that I trust last night and told me that this offense worked at Tennessee, it should work in the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, for people that worry about, is this South Florida offense going to work at Auburn, it worked well enough to lead the nation in total offense when Alex Golish was the offensive coordinator there at Tennessee.
All right, then not to monopolize, but last but not least, really super excited about a lot of the information that's being put out by quality baseball people, including Jason.
Oh, yeah, none better.
The pitching staff looks wicked nasty this year, just wicked nasty. So we'll be there for opening day. And Bill, are you going to Dallas for the tournament?
Nah, not going to be able to make it there. I mean, because that's still in basketball season, and Dan and I can only be gone at the same time. I think for a very brief period, and we've already passed that now.
Well, I can't get any of my friends to go with me other than my wife, and so we'll be there. Just Globe Life was it's a great place to go to a ball game. Number one. You can get really good seats, and there's a hotel directly outside left field right after you walk through the entertainment section. And anybody thinking about going, it's a remarkable stadium to go watch baseball. We were there for all three games last year.
I'm sure there'll be some orange and blue there. Just I'm not going to be able to make it.
Yeah, that's my birthday present from my
wife. Yeah, well, that's good.
She's not a huge baseball fan.
I said, well,
she tolerates.
I told Texas already, you know, his Valentine's present is the opening day weekend, and that's what Cindy's getting as well.
So. So I may need an attorney by the time those 2 weekends are over. For those that don't know, my wife was a basketball player at Auburn. That's where I get most of my basketball stuff. So, all right. Well, I appreciate you guys. Sorry I haven't been participating.
No,
business has been crazy, but it's been great crazy.
Oh, that's good.
We'll talk to you later.
Keep us posted, right. Tex. Great stuff.
All right, man. Take care. All right, bye-bye.
We'll get to our first break.
The good question from Tex as far as like what changed first half to the second half with basketball. Because, I mean,
It was a struggle. It was a real struggle in the first half.
You know, it feels kind of simplistic to say like Auburn shots started going in and Ole Miss's didn't. But like you did start to see Auburn have, you know, Auburn had a couple of barrages where it's like Ole Miss's is just, I mean, one and done with like long twos or ill-advised kind of like, I mean, it was, I think it started with Auburn's defense. Like Auburn's defense, Ole Miss's defense.
I mean, Ole Miss hit some threes to be able to keep them in the game.
But I think Ole Miss's defense started to wilt in the second half.
Felt like it.
In a way that Auburn's didn't. Mm-hmm. And you started to see that lead, you know, that lead stayed kind of comfortable for Auburn and that Ole Miss run. I mean, they did make a run eventually and cut it to three.
Yeah, I mean, but you're right. I mean, it stayed from 6 or 7 to 11 and 13 and 9. It would stay in that like multiple possession, like 3 possessions or something like that until they made that little run. But yeah, Auburn never wilted, and they kept attacking. That's something. I mean, Auburn kept really forcing the issue against the Ole Miss defense. And that Ole Miss defense had only allowed – two of their last 3 opponents to not even get out of the 60s. So I thought that 50-point second half was really impressive for the Tigers last night. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number 2. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive. With Bill at The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday, about to be evening. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. All right, we talked in hour number 1 about the situation with Charles Bediako, Alabama trying to get him eligible. He is enrolled for the spring term at Alabama. And he has sought and has gotten a temporary restraining order to allow him. The NCAA has said he is ineligible to play because he has played for the last 2-plus years in the G League and had signed multiple NBA contracts. And that's always been in any sport. If you have played professionally in that sport, it's always been that you've been ineligible to play again at the collegiate level. However, the NCAA has allowed a couple of players who had not attended college and had been playing in the G League to return to college. You see them at Baylor. Where's the other kid? Is it Oklahoma?
The Baylor's the Baylor player is the most prominent example of a G Leaguer. You have a couple other guys that were international pros or former G League players that
have been granted eligibility by the NCAA. So that is what Bediako and Alabama are trying to get. Look, I mean, there's no question. Nate Oates would love to have Charles Bediako to help out his front court. That is a question for Alabama. And right now it appears that Alabama's planning on playing Charles Bediako this Saturday against Tennessee.
Yeah, and the NCAA has made sort of the NBA contract, including the two-way deal. That's like a clear distinction they've used as far as who is a professional and who is not and who still has eligibility to play. If Charles Bediako were to win in court and make that unenforceable from the NCAA standpoint,
we thought Pandora's box had been opened with some of the things previously. That would then open the door for countless players who had foregone their, you know, some of their eligibility and signed professional contracts to be able to return to college.
And to quote from a NCAA statement, I believe earlier today, a judge ordering the NCAA that a former NBA player can take the court Saturday against actual college student athletes is exactly why Congress must step in and empower college sports to enforce eligibility rules.
Yes,
yeah, unquote.
So the NCAA still is hoping that Congress will step in and do something. I don't know that I could expect anything to be done like immediately. I mean, sure, there are other things that are going on, yeah, that I would think the folks in Washington have to have as a higher priority.
So you have Nanji, right, who is the player from Baylor, who who signed. He was drafted in the NBA draft a couple of years ago. Never signed, never played in the NBA. Never signed an NBA contract, including a two-way deal. He was given his eligibility back. And then Bediako is sort of arguing that, like, that has opened the door for players who did sign two-way deals but didn't appear in NBA games to maybe get their eligibility back. But I think the crux of it is that the arguments are, like, the rules seem arbitrary and difficult to enforce as written. And so I don't know, I can understand why it's so important, because if Bediako were to win this, it opens the, you know, pretty big question as to who's allowed to play.
Yeah, well, I mean, I then wonder in other sports. I mean, we've been talking baseball. What would then prevent players who had eligibility left that were then signed and struggled in the minor leagues from coming back? There are more guys there that would have multiple years of eligibility, but that's assuming we're still going by the 5-year window, which is being challenged. And apparently the feeling is that Trinidad Chambliss is going to is going to win his case to be granted an extra year of eligibility beyond the 5-year window that the NCAA has had for decades.
Oh, I mean, I think that there are, all the rules are in question at some point. We've had someone ask earlier, the fact that you have as varied as, you know, names like Saban and Calipari, Bruce Pearl, Jay Billis, that all seem comfortable saying collective bargaining is your way out. Collective bargaining is your way to have a set of rules that everyone has agreed on.
Yeah, to some sanity in this, so that you do have some rules. You have an idea, okay, who is going to be able to play and who is not. We were talking during the last break, and I'd love to toss this out for our listeners out there. You asked, I mean, you know, do fans really want their college teams to just be minor league teams? I mean, that's all it really is, what it is
with no time limit,
right,
as far as how long you play.
For your team to have players that are there just because they weren't quite good enough to make it to the top level of their professional sport.
I don't know. My suspicion is no. As far as, like, would that be good for the popularity of college basketball or college football to remove the eligibility clock entirely?
No, it seems like it would water it down. Seems like it would, you know, you're taking opportunities away from young players to be able to try to make their mark and get to that next level by keeping some guys. It's almost like for baseball fans, where Double A seemed more exciting than Triple A, because Triple A would have a lot of guys that were bouncing back and forth, yeah, and weren't quite good enough for the majors, where Double A was more young guys that were on the way up, as opposed to old guys trying to hang on.
On one hand, I would understand the folks saying, well, your star players who aren't good enough to become star players in the NFL or the NBA, those players could stick around for longer and continue playing in college. I hear that argument, and I'm
right.
I'm interested in it. At the same time, like, I think it's unknown as far as college football fans, college basketball fans, would they want to stick around and watch it is if it was sort of unabashedly, hey, this is a team of guys that aren't quite good enough to be in the NBA, and that's sort of like what the roster consists of around the sport. Is that something you want to follow passionately? Is that something you want to invest your time and money in? I don't know. I don't know if that's or if the sort of the 5-year time limit is part of the appeal of college football and college basketball.
Athletics. I mean,
the churn of new players in and older players out is sort of like, I think that's these are all things that like I never wondered about this before.
Oh no, NIL, there was no reason to.
Right? If a player wanted to play 15 years of college, it's like a plot of like a Rodney Dangerfield movie.
Yeah.
Or something where it's like, yeah, imagine if a guy wanted to play 20 years of college basketball, would he be allowed to? It's like I don't know, but I think now you're having to wrestle with some of that and questions like, can the NCAA set an eligibility clock at all? Are they allowed? Like who's allowed to play? Who's not allowed to play?
Well, and we've talked about this with some callers, and yes, this would be dependent upon all the schools that are part of whatever organization, be it the NCAA or if there is a new organization, all the schools would have to agree to those rules.
Yeah, but once you get a set of rules that the conference commissioners sign up, like agree to,
then the schools and the conference are going to have to.
Well, getting the schools to fall in line feels pretty easy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
And that was the thinking behind the CSC, right, was that you would have a corporation where the board – the chair, the people making decisions would be the commissioners of the most powerful conferences in the sport, sort of acting not only as representatives for their member institutions, but also for like ESPN and Fox, presumably the broadcast networks who would want to say in any sort of major.
I think one of the things you have right now, and it's interesting that there has been silence from the SEC office in Birmingham on the Charles Bediako situation, is that the conference commissioners are hesitant to step in and say no to a prominent team in their conference that feels like this could be something that is good for them, which might then in turn be good for the conference.
It is interesting that Sankey's got.
He's usually pretty much available when there is a controversial situation
and
going on.
And I said it in hour number one, like about Bediako. I don't hate the idea that a college basketball player gets to retain his eligibility.
No.
Up until what, he appears in an NBA game, if you want to go that far with it, like if you want to give him the leverage of,
I'd say until he signs that contract with a team. Doesn't matter if he appears in a game or not, and that is what they do in baseball. I think that should be in all sports. Yeah. It should be you have the opportunity because a lot of times there's bad advice or things don't work out, and a player is sort of left hanging, doesn't have the opportunity he thought he was going to have, he or she was going to have, and I think they should have the option at that point before they go ahead and sign a contract to come back.
It's specifically, like, if you have eligibility remaining and you go undrafted or you go you're drafted but you're not crazy about where you were drafted,
right.
I don't think your college career should immediately be over automatically.
I agree.
Like I think that's a rule to reconsider.
That makes sense.
A player like RJ Lewis, right, who mm-hmm. went undrafted this past year in the NBA draft and has not signed with an NBA team and has eligibility remaining, like I would be interested in his case. That's not something to renegotiate in January, though.
No.
That feels
no,
like
no, you don't do that like, midseason.
That's the part to me where it's like with Bediako, and he might very well win like this case. I mean, I think people are skeptical about it, but the same people were very skeptical of Pavia when Pavia said, I want another year. And then Pavia not only got that year, but finished runner-up for the Heisman Trophy in that extra year. So it's like, I mean, you don't know which one of these rules are gonna pass the smell test in court. But in general, I would say, like, I'm not as aghast by, oh my goodness, a player like Charles Bediako gets to resume his college basketball career. I'm more appalled by, like, we're making this rule 2 weeks into conference play. Like January, we're deciding
that. It sure looks like Nate Oates went, hey, and I don't blame Alabama or any school for looking around and going, hey, now that these G League guys have been allowed to come back, do we have anybody? How about Charles? How about the big guy? He's still in the 5 year window. We could even play. Yeah, he should still be eligible. So I mean, yes, I can understand that, but yeah, I don't think that this is the kind of thing that should be done, you know, mid season here. I guess their argument is, hey, it's just the start of the spring term anyway, and a lot of players have in the past transferred and become eligible for the second term.
Now, JT Thor has appeared in NBA games, right?
Yes, he has.
Okay, so we would be having to break new ground, right? By signing.
Well, I think, once you allow a player who signed an NBA contract to come back, yep, then why should you? Who's going to then say, well, you've played too many games, or you've played too well? I mean, the deal is, if you signed, you signed. Mm. And if you've got eligibility and you want to come back, you ought to come back. So I don't disagree with people Auburn ought to check into JT Thor, because this would be his final year of eligibility.
It's not just Thor and it's not just Sharif Cooper, though. It's also like, I mean, you think about how many players would get their eligibility back.
Right.
Right. And you're talking about like hundreds of players from different schools that presumably you could.
And, you know, we don't know that Auburn hasn't checked into this, because that's one of the things Stephen Pearl talked about is they're locked in as far as their number of scholarships.
Yeah.
They didn't have an extra scholarship to give when there was talk about adding someone, you know, for the start of the spring term.
Now, I guess somebody not in your program would have theoretically needed to have, you know, but I don't, if you're not enrolled at a school, I don't think you need to go into the transfer portal anymore, right? Like if you leave a school for several years,
you should be a free agent.
I would think that. So you're not just talking about players from your own school.
No, you're talking about anybody who would have eligibility.
You're talking about from the last couple of seasons combined, hundreds of players potentially who could maybe get their eligibility restored if this Bediako thing goes through, including maybe a couple guys who left Auburn. But like, no, this would be and maybe you could still get them enrolled in time for. Like right now,
Jason sounded like it's not a problem for football right now.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
The thought of opening up, I mean, that's like something out of science fiction, right? Like you open a portal and 300 players from the past are back.
That's right.
That you thought were out of college basketball that are now scattered around the sport participating as well.
Yeah. Need a big man? How about a point guard?
It's like, it's like what happened to the NHL after the Berlin Wall fell down. It's suddenly
there's look at all these guys.
They can all really play. Like Charles Bediako might knock down like the Berlin Wall of eligibility in college basketball, and who knows who's on the other side of that wall, Bill.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love to hear from you as we head into the final half hour of the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. And let's head back to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And who was it? Dan is up next.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. I've got a question for you. Okay, so they just raised the number of scholarships that football teams can have, correct?
Yeah, well, the roster limit is 105. Doesn't mean you have. Doesn't mean everybody has to be on scholarship, but you can have up to 105 players on scholarship. Yes.
Okay. Well, if they did that, then why is there a limit on basketball? Why can't they just say we're going to raise basketball up two more scholarships?
Well, they could. I mean, what happened is
what is when the basketball limit? Is it 15?
15.
Yeah, 15.
When football was raised up, they increased some of the other sports. You still have to worry about Title IX. So all of the men's sports, I mean, baseball went from 11 3/4 to 35. So yes, they could do that. I don't know why they didn't decide to add to the basketball number.
Do Auburn's men have 15 guys on scholarship? Is that the thinking that like with?
I think they put a walk on or two on this year, and once you've got them on, you can't drop them mid season.
Yeah. Well, I was just trying to understand why they were saying we were having a hard time getting another big guy. You know, obviously there's all these guys in the G League. I don't understand this, and maybe you guys can tell me, you know, more information on it. Okay, so Jani Broome, he signed a contract, and he was with Philadelphia, and then right now they got him in the G League. Supposedly, he scored 50 points the other day. So, is his contract that he has? Is it contingent on him being in the G League and being able to jump up if they need him?
Yeah, the two-way deal. Yes, I believe
yes.
so.
Yeah.
So as long as he's in the G League, you know, because I hear stories where they're saying people in the G League don't make any money. But is that just a? It just means that
there are players in the G League trying to get two-way deals that aren't making very much money.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the guys that are on two-way deals with NBA teams are getting paid, and then with the possibility of getting paid a lot more. Like it's like if you get called up and get it turned into a main roster deal.
Gotcha. So basically, Alabama's guy, Bediako, he wasn't really doing anything in the NBA. So he was kind of just going through the G League, kind of just rolling along, not really, you know.
Yeah, he hadn't played a game.
So he became available.
Yeah, hadn't played a game in the NBA. So he was strictly a G League guy.
Okay. So that's what everybody's looking for now, apparently.
Well, those are the guys thus far that have been reinstated or been allowed to be playing college basketball were guys that had not played in the NBA. And actually, the first two, I believe, were players that hadn't played in college.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I was just trying to understand all that stuff. Okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you it's hard. Yeah, and some good questions there. I mean, it's hard to figure out exactly, all right, what has gone on. What has been allowed? What's Charles Bediako trying to get? And then what would if he is allowed to play? What is that? What does that open up for other players?
Yeah, and what would be fairly groundbreaking for Bediako would be if he were to sign a two-way deal with a G League team that technically had him under contract to an NBA team. If you were to sign that and then get your college eligibility back, there's the question of who else would suddenly get their college eligibility back too.
Right.
Because that's the new thing. That like you can't say any of the other G League guys, they didn't sign two-way contracts with NBA teams.
Right.
Bediako did. And so if Bediako's given his eligibility back, then there are and there's the question of where the line actually exists. If that's not the line, is the line if you've appeared in an NBA game? Is that even the line anymore? If not, then where?
I don't know why it would be. Really, I mean, you would seem like once you have that deal.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie Baker said, like the NCAA has not and will not grant eligibility to any prospective or returning student athlete who has signed an NBA contract, including a two-way contract, unquote. Okay. So the NCAA's position is...
So what they're saying is it's the G League's a different animal from the NBA, which I would guess the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NFL. Those you sign a contract with those, and you're not coming back, is what they're saying. We'll see, though. I mean, so if Bediako is... if he wins in court, and is able to play, then the NCAA can't. I don't see where they can hold anyone who has signed any contract with a team, a professional team at any level, from returning.
It would open the door to challenges, I think, across multiple sports as to who is who could maybe be allowed to have more college eligibility. Like that would be the next, if the Bediako thing were to go through. And in the meantime, the restraining order says the NCAA can't discipline Alabama for playing Bediako. I don't think there's fear from Alabama's side as far as, well, if you play him, then it turned out that he's rendered ineligible. Like, is your season in jeopardy? Are these games going to count towards your NCAA tournament profile? Questions like that. Like, I don't think there's. I think they've calculated that risk, and decided to go with Bediako. Like, I would
sure
expect.
Sounds like it.
I would expect to see him on Saturday. Like, yeah. I think he's going to play.
Well, if he does, and the NCAA can't do anything about it, then that should be just the end for the NCAA. If they can't enforce their rules.
You feel like this is the meteor?
Yeah, coming, I think
like,
so.
This is the meteor coming towards you? Like,
because, like you said, Charlie Baker, he didn't hem and haw. I mean, he's not, well, possibly this or that. He's saying no.
Like, that's, his language is pretty clear there. Like, that's, he says, this is the red line of who is eligible and who is not eligible in college athletics. We'll see.
Yep. I think we will really soon. All right, let's get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join us, 334-321-1390, as we wind things down here on the Wednesday Drive.
When it's ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, final segment here on this Wednesday evening. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. And yeah, you brought up, we've been talking, we mentioned JT Thor. And Sharif Cooper was in that same class.
Yes, he was.
If you're having trouble there in the backcourt, I think Sharif would be wouldn't be a bad addition.
Yeah, just
and no, he's on a two-way deal with the Wizards, right? I think.
No telling. What sort of Pandora's box you open up there with the Bediako thing and what that could do to rosters before even this season is over, let alone moving forward. Huge win for Auburn last night, Bill. For a team that hadn't won on the road yet this year, for a team that is still trying to battle through the shooting slump, for a team that's full of guys playing their first year at D1 basketball, for a team that's down to seven guys in the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think seeing those guys fight together and just out physical, like just out sweat and out bleed Ole Miss. For 40 minutes. I mean, the points in the paint, they outscore them by 24 in the paint.
Just dominated the boards. I mean,
obliterate them on the rebounds.
16, 17 rebound advantage.
And how many times were Ole Miss's like offensive possessions just going nowhere? Right? It was a lot of like.
Oh, they were one and done. They either made the shot or Auburn rebounded.
And a lot of contested jumpers, a lot of long twos, a lot of out of rhythm threes. I mean, Perry was dropping nukes from the outside, right?
But I think like five or six of them.
Yeah, but I think otherwise Auburn did a really good job in the half court, and that's team. Mm-hmm. I mean, team's got to be a good half court defense, and I thought that they really brought it in that aspect of the game on Tuesday night, and now they get they get a couple of days off before going to Gainesville on Saturday and facing the reigning national champs, but. I mean, it's a team that feels like maybe they've got a little bit of momentum after two.
Won three out of four now.
After two wins and three out of four. And two home losses or two losses early in conference, Georgia and A&M, that came down to the absolute wire. I mean, A&M, it's that buzzer beater that gets waved off. With Georgia, it's a game that goes into overtime after Auburn plays them tough to the last second. So yeah, I think it's a I'm excited to see where this ride goes because it's again it's different than the last couple of seasons because the last few years there was so much riding on how does this game go? How does this season go? Are you going to win the conference? Are you going to win in the end? And that matters here, but a lot of these guys figure to be back, and a lot of these guys figure to be part of a multi-year journey at Auburn, and seeing them get better over the last couple of weeks has me curious, not just to see where it could go by the end of the season, but like what it could look like as these guys build more and more chemistry together.
I mean, look, we saw it in the back in the preseason in the game against Houston, and then the win over St. John's and the win over NC State. This is a talented team. It's not a team that doesn't have talent. It's just where they're gonna click chemistry wise, and then the question was, can they play defense? Can these guys play team defense? And it didn't look promising at the start of conference play. By the time you got into conference play, it was like, I'm not so sure that these guys, if they're going to win, they're going to have to score 85, 90 points. But we've seen now in the last couple of ball games, I mean, I think the most positive thing we've seen is they've won ball games in which they haven't hit shots that you feel like they should make. This team is going, they're going to shoot the ball better than they have the last couple of games. Yet they've been able to win those games in spite of going 4 for 36 from outside the 3-point line. They've been doing it inside. They found a different way to win. Like we were talking, what Jason was talking about. I mean, this team, you figured this was going to be a team that was going to be a high-flying, high-scoring team that would, want to run the court. And when that first shot is available, go ahead and take it. Now, I don't think Stephen Pearl has a problem at all. If it's a good look, go ahead and take the shot, because you do have guys that can make those shots. But I think it's very positive. They're playing much better defensively. That was something that was driving Stephen Pearl crazy, because he's a defensive guy, and they are doing a much better job of, staying in their lanes, cutting down on the gaps, and getting on, getting on their man much better than they had been.
It was way too easy for Georgia and for A&M and for Missouri. I think that,
they were able to get to the basket with, didn't feel like, any impedance at all.
Yeah, and I think you've seen Auburn ratchet up the intensity a little bit. It's not so much about pressing in the full court.
And when you're only playing seven, that's dangerous. You can't do that for very long.
No, but it's about really trying to bring it in the half court and trying to stay locked in and trying to stay in front of your opponent as much as you can. And so, yeah, I think Auburn did a great job of it last night. Really want to see what they got on Saturday, because it's going to be a battle. I mean, Florida's excellent, and this is an Auburn team that hadn't played a team like Florida in a little while.
No.
hadn't played a true road game like Florida. Probably since Arizona. Would love to see Auburn make things uncomfortable for the Gators down at the OC.
Yeah, couple of games on the SEC schedule tonight. Texas is at Kentucky. The Cats have started, trying to turn things around. They won three straight, I guess, now as well.
Auburn's got Texas next week at home too. That's a Texas team that's going to make their visit to Neville Arena.
First visit.
Yeah, that was a road game last year, wasn't it? Yeah, Auburn went to Austin last year, so it'll be first time Texas has come here since they joined the league. That'll be the midweek game next week, but you'll see Texas playing Kentucky tonight.
Yep.
That's the
6 o'clock game.
Want to see what Kentucky can do as league play progresses too.
Mm-hmm. And then just one other game, because Alabama and Tennessee, who play Saturday, and again, right now it's looking like very likely Charles Bediako going. The Vols 2-3, Alabama 3-2. They are off this midweek. So there's only one other game tonight. That's Mississippi State in College Station against Texas A&M, team that is playing very well as well. I think they've got the second best overall record in the conference, and they have one loss just like Florida does in league play.
Yeah, if A&M won tonight, they'd be tied with Florida at the top of the league, 5-1. Which right. I think that folks probably wouldn't be all that shocked to think there's going to be a 5-1 team 6 games into the SEC. I don't know if anybody had A&M as that team, and so that would be that'd be an impressive it'd be an impressive start for Bucky, and this would be a nice win for a state team that does not want to start 2-4 with some heartbreaking losses early on in conference play.
Yeah, a lot of teams with 2-3 losses in conference play right now.
I mean, State had Ole Miss on the ropes on Saturday. And Ole Miss hit the shots to win that one late, but that's been the case with I think a couple of states games. They've come down to the wire, and not all of them have gone State's way.
Nope, 11 of the 16 SEC teams have either 2 or 3 losses.
Yep.
So that's how bunched it is there in the middle. All right, fun show today. Again, our thanks to Jason Caldwell for joining us in hour number one. If you missed any of Jason or any of the show, check out the podcast.
That's right. Podcasts of The Drive available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Go to ESPNAU.com or search on your favorite podcasting platform.
Who have the Trojans got tomorrow?
We've got Georgia Southern coming to town tomorrow. The Eagles coming in from Statesboro.
All right. So good luck on that one, Dan. Don Dunn will be in. We'll check in with Justin Ferguson, maybe here in the studio, but we'll check in with him regardless. But that's going to do it for the Wednesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.